This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Texture 1070, 10 writes, Adam, let's not forget about capital gains that Angela would have to pay if she were to sell her personal unit. It says this government is out of control. Another texture, 1070, 10 writes to me, Tax Court Canada just ruled the sale of a short-term rental property is subject to GST on the sale price. Oh. Another texter writes, Adam, why doesn't she just flip her business and do the same thing and get another job? It doesn't work that way, texter. For starters, there's a completely different license and education for long-term rental property management. It's a different skill set. It'd be a different client base. It would be any number of things would be very different. Her and her partner, Ryan Swaski, they have built, I think, a really innovative, really smart business. And it's the sort of thing where I see it and I say, good for them. It's good to see people who think outside the box, who look at change and see an opportunity, rewarded for their initiative, rewarded for taking that chance, that risk, try to build something in the community. And for the government to just wake up one day and say, we're going to legislate your entire worth out of existence is not fair. Government assumed that everybody could just sell their units. The government forgot what a business is. The government forgot about the value that is created in building that organization, it's infinitely complicated web of relationships and people and customers and clients and vendors, weaving that all together into a tapestry that technically doesn't even exist beyond an intangible concept. That is a business. That is what it actually is at its core. And the government has just basically snapped its fingers and it's going to be gone. There's nothing to sell because the business model doesn't function anymore. It's been legislated to be inert. That's wrong. I don't care who you are. And I've got people texting me saying, oh, Adam, I started a business developing physical film and now people are getting digital cameras. Can I come on the radio and complain about it? I said, texter, you've got it backwards. Here, texter writes, hey, Adam, I started a film developing business. Wouldn't you know it? Digital cameras came out. I also invested in the stock market. My stocks went down. Can I be on the radio whining about it? Texter, you have it completely backwards in your analogy. What has happened is the government has legislated digital cameras out of existence because it's new technology and people are using it in a way the government has decided that it doesn't like. And the government is forcing everyone to use film cameras now. That is the equivalent of what has actually happened. You want to stay somewhere? You're going to stay in a physical hotel. This is not a case of innovation and change, having the market innovate an older product out of existence. This is exactly the opposite. This is the government fighting the tide and trying to legislate by fiat, without compensation, new innovative businesses out of existence and force people to do things the old way. So while you might think you're clever with that analogy, you're not. It's backwards. And the more I hear about this, the more I think that it's wrong. Government can do it, but I don't know if they can do it legally. And ultimately, it'll be up to the courts to decide what can and what should and should not happen. So I'm watching this one with great interest. Let's see. I wanted to talk federal politics now. The 2024 federal budget came out yesterday. Massive amounts of spending. Capital gains is going up. The rhetoric is really ramping up. I'm seeing some people say this government's out of control. I'm seeing other people say this government's fighting for my interests. I know there's polling that's been done. I saw it was Frank Graves with Ecos did a tweet, I think, within the past 24 hours that I saw. They had data suggesting that it was voters under 40 that were more likely to adopt the mindset of having the rich pay more, or the wealthy pay more, or they're more of their fair share. So it might make them some gains in younger voters, which have largely been co-opted by the Conservative Party in recent months. All in all, I'm not going to pass judgment on this budget. I'm just watching and seeing what everybody else says. I always like to get the opinion of industry, though, especially our industries that we care a lot about that have to do very important work in the years to come. Chris Gardner, President, CEO, Independent Contractors and Business Association of BC. Morning. How are we doing?
Good morning. Doing well, as well as can be expected after the budget that came down yesterday.
That makes it sound like you've got some concerns. What do you think of it?
Well, listen, to service the interest costs on the government debt, we're now going to be spending about $1 billion every week. $1 billion a week that we have to pay just on the interest on the debt. And so That's why government spending matters. $1 billion a week that we could be spending on hospitals, schools, roads, bridges, housing, all of those things that are really, really important to people, but we're spending it in interest payments on the debt because the government has just shoveled billions and billions and billions of dollars off the back of a truck, and most of it will not be particularly effective. Most of the government programs don't work very well. We've seen examples of that, like ArriveCan and the flurry of programs that they announce. Are generally very inefficient and don't deliver the results that are promised to people. So, of course, young people will say things like, oh, you know, I think if you spend more on this program or that program, or I think if you, if the quote-unquote the wealthy pay their fair share. Well, what? How do we define wealthy in this country? And what is the fair share of that? You know, you get, so you start getting into the top income tax bracket at $150,000 in Canada, $120,000 US. Joe Biden, a Democratic president of the United States, said yesterday he is not going to increase taxes on people in the United States, which he defines as middle class, making $400,000 US or less. $400,000 US, that's $600,000 Canadian.
I really am shocked that we're seeing the capital gains going up. I've read some analysts, and they say, Adam, the tax treatment's actually being brought in line with how dividends work and some other stuff, but I don't know. It just feels off.
Well, the challenge is that who's really going to be captured by that? It'll be the family that's got an asset that they sell as they get near retirement, and they'll be captured by that.
Mm.
Those who are generally going to be higher net worth will be able to program out their spending and keep most of that, because they'll do it every year, and they'll just keep it below the threshold. So
that
it's the average person that gets caught by all of these programs that sound really nice, but the challenge with our political leadership is they see the world as they want to see it. They don't understand how it really operates, to your previous commentary before I came on the show.
Yeah. That's one of the problems that I'm noticing, and it's almost like there's a divergence happening where there's one part of Canada, and it was all through COVID, and it's even now, where the government seems to control everything. The government is the employer. The government wants to provide your entertainment. The government's going to provide your park that you sit in. And the government's going to make sure that you have a nice place to go buy a coffee after. Like, the government's trying to create these artificial pocket economies, if you will. And I'm pulling my hair out because you can't actually do that. It all comes from somewhere. And generally, the more government does that somewhere, the more distortions and unintended consequences you're going to see elsewhere. But more and more, the government just seems not to, at all levels, seems not to appreciate that. We see the same thing federally with the work from home legislation and whatnot, as well as provincially with the work from home legislation. We work in a capital city here in Victoria, and we have seen our economy substantially impacted by many government workers just never returning to the office. And I saw yesterday one of the pledges in the budget is to reduce, I think it's the federal workforce office footprint, by something like 50%. So that's just forever. It's just going to stay that way.
Well, it will lock in inefficiency, and, you know, there was the, during COVID, you know, trying to get a passport and, you know, trying to get just basic, if you're applying for new programs and just trying to get those applications in and processed, everything sort of comes to a grinding halt or takes a very, very long time. And if you think about this in the context of housing, you know, before the budget, the Prime Minister ran around the country and made announcement after announcement about spending billions to say that all of these programs, we are going to build 560,000 new homes every year between now and 2031. Well, last year we built 230,000.
I know. I actually have a mild obsession when it comes to property development, because I think it's the most important policy question that faces us now. The government has figured out it can promise us bottom line progress. I refuse to believe they actually have a plan that'll do that, though. I'm sorry, I just do.
It's impossible. It will not happen. And the most in the last 51 years, The year that we built the most homes in Canada was 1974, and we built about 260,000 new homes. And effectively, the federal government is now saying that beginning this year and then beginning next year, we're gonna start building more than double that. And the reality is it's not going to happen, and it's not going to happen because most of these programs will not work. They're going to be too complicated. They will misallocate resources. They'll be too confusing, and it'll be too expensive. And what the government really needs to do is work with industry and get the private sector to build the homes that we need. And so the trick is that most of the challenge around home building, most of it, is at City Hall,
yeah,
where it just takes so long to get projects approved and permitted.
Totally.
And we've got to take some of that decision-making outside of City Hall. They're being overwhelmed. They're being overwhelmed by, in terms of, just think of what we did last year. Last year, in terms of our population growth, we took a city the size of Calgary and we added it to Canada.
Yeah.
And we're going to do the same thing this year. Mm-hmm. We've got two new Calgaries in Canada. And where are these people going to live? Where are they going to go to school? Where are they going to see doctors, get health care? All of that, the rapid explosion of population is crushing affordability and overwhelming infrastructure. So we've got to figure, we've got to get that number right. How many new people should be coming to Canada? And make sure that when they do come, they've got the skills. They're doctors, nurses, tradespeople, technicians, teachers, people who can fill the skills gaps in our economy. We need those people, definitely. But we've got to find the right balance in terms of what is the number of people we can reasonably absorb? And then how do we start building all this infrastructure? Because it's not just the homes that we need to build. It's all the supporting infrastructure. For every home you build, you got to build $100,000 in supporting infrastructure. You start multiplying that by 560,000 new homes a year times 100,000, and now you're starting to talk hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so we need the federal government and the province to stop running around, sit down with cities, and all three levels of government got to stop the finger pointing. Sit down with industry. How are we going to figure this out? We need new funding models, and we need to find new ways of getting projects approved faster. And we've got to set about building the homes that we need. But most of what you're reading is not going to move the dial. And so when RBC said last week that the percentage of household income that you need to own a home in Canada is 64%.
Yeah.
In Vancouver, it's 106%.
Yeah.
I can say with almost certainty that over the next 5 years, the affordability challenge is not going to change very much.
No.
Given the trajectory we're on right now.
Chris Gardner, our guest, President and CEO, Independent Contractors and Business Association of British Columbia, raising concerns with the increased taxation, capital gains specifically, as well as increased levels of spending we're seeing in the 2024 federal budget. Still early days. I haven't really digested enough to have many strong opinions on the document, but I am noticing some patterns already coalescing with respect to the responses that we are seeing, similar to those of our guests. Chris, any final thoughts for now?
Listen, we are in a very deep hole on affordability. There's no magic wand. Everybody better start sitting down and having a conversation, because it's going to take us an awful long time to build our way out of this.
Yeah. Chris Gardner, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye now. He's right, you know. Housing, it's huge. And we need to build our way out of this. That's the only way. One of the other reasons that we have migration that's happening right now, we don't talk about this very much, but one of the reasons the government welcomed in as many new people to Canada as they did is because we also have the aging workforce. You know, when we were kids, I was born in the very, very early 1980s, for those of you who don't know how old I actually am. But when I was going to school, I was told that the baby boomer generation, when they all started to retire, which of course has happened at this point and is happening at this point, that Canada was going to have, they called it the silver tsunami. It was going to be a major demographic problem. And I still remember, you know, being told, like, it'll be on you. You'll be one of the adults in the workforce at that point to try to keep all the systems going as our healthcare system gets overwhelmed, as all these other things happened. But the one economic side effect that seems to have coalesced around this that they did not warn us about, and that in hindsight actually makes perfect sense, is there won't be enough houses. And why aren't there enough houses in part? It's because in order to replace people who are aging out of the workforce, when the birth rate was insufficient to actually do that, and you didn't have that steady stream of new Canadians being born, going through the school system, graduating high school, college, etc., and entering the workforce, because you didn't have that one-to-one replacement, the only way that we could maintain the numbers in our workforce to keep the country running was through immigration. Okay, that's all well and good. We should have realized sooner that replacing a population sort of boom and then a lull, if you will, afterwards, like the millennials versus their parents, the boomers, when we try to replace a population by bringing fully grown adults into a country, many of whom are already trained, many of whom are adults, that's they need to be to immigrate anyways, unless they bring their kids with them, they need a house. So it's not like a little baby being born that can just live in a spare room for 8 years until they need their own room, and then they go to school, and then they do this, and then we have 18 years to build them a little apartment. The problem is that the system that we had that was largely replenished in terms of Canada's population growth through birth can't function when massive amounts of new fully grown adults come into the country. And we need them to come into the country to fill the vacant jobs, to work, to keep, to support the system as the baby boomers keep their houses and at the same time try to enjoy their retirements. So in hindsight, yes, the healthcare system was something that we needed to worry about. But God, if I could go back in time and warn people, I would have been just screaming at the top of my lungs as many years as I could, build more houses, build them now. We're going to have to use immigration to keep the workforce at stable levels to support folks as the baby boomers age into retirement. And they're going to need places to live because the baby boomers are still going to be in the houses that many of them were in while they were in their productive working lives. So those spaces won't be available for newcomers. And there just won't be anywhere for the newcomers to stay. They're going to be bidding against everybody in terms of existing rental stock and new stock that's being built. You know, in hindsight, the housing crisis was unavoidable, at least the way I look at it. And I have no idea why I didn't see it soon. I guess all things are unavoidable in hindsight. But yeah, because everybody goes, Adam, we need to curtail immigration. We need to curtail immigration. Okay, I hear you. One of the problems, though, is that we need immigration to keep our workforce numbers high enough because we have far more retirees than we do working age people as a proportion than we used to. And we knew that demographic problem was coming. We knew it was coming for decades, in fact. Texture at 107010 writes, every single city in the country got it wrong. Give me a break. This was planned. Texture, how could every single city have a plan that would come together? No, every single city in the country had a baby boom in the 50s after 45. And every single city in the country also had a millennial generation that was born where there just weren't as many kids. And every single city in the country is seeing the boomers retire at around the same time because they all exist in the same space-time continuum. And that's part of what we're actually seeing. We should have seen it in advance. We should have built more housing in advance. And it's on us to build as much as we can now because this problem is not going to fix itself. Because even if we do constrain migration, then there's not enough people in the workforce. And that's a different economic crisis. Quick break. Back in a moment.
Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070 and streaming on the iHeartRadio app.
Back on the air here at CFAX 1070, Texture 107010 writes, I remember reading Boom, Bust, and Echo about 30 years ago. It predicted a massive increase in BC real estate prices. Well, at least somebody saw it coming. I don't remember being warned about that specific problem. Why didn't we get out ahead of this? I'm serious when I say, why didn't we get out ahead of this? It is a completely predictable problem. Going to be bringing a million people a year into Canada, and we're building 220,000 houses. And I'm thinking, it's a 4-to-1 ratio. We fall further behind there, don't we? Yeah, we do. Why didn't we start in advance? I suppose that's a quintessential human question, though. Lisa Foxall is calling in from Langford. Hey, Lisa, how you doing?
Good, Adam. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. Did you hear Wendy Hobbs call in earlier? She is not happy about this Luxton sidewalk betrayal thing.
I have to agree with her. There absolutely should have been public participation on these sidewalks, and Luxton, it should have definitely been considered. It's it's one of the areas that should have been at the top of the list, I feel.
I think she actually had metrics that she read out the other night, and I know that you spoke the other night as well. It was one hell of a meeting, wasn't it?
It was, and I called to talk about that, and I've been to the last couple of meetings. I haven't had a chance to call in, so I wanted to talk about that meeting and the PFC meeting. And the last meeting, I have to hand it to Nirmal. He stood his ground. You know, it was unacceptable for that fellow to stand there and be able to call us boneheads.
You know, and I thank you for saying that, Lisa. I talked to a lot of people about that. And the fact that you were sitting there in your seat and you had that man yelling at you, just shouting at you, pointing at you, calling you names, you shouldn't be treated like that in the City Hall chambers. That's not fair to you. And for Goodmanson to sit there and let it happen, he should be ashamed of himself.
Yeah, he did absolutely nothing until I had to holler out for him to intervene. And then finally he did something.
Yep. And it was after you yelled out. I'm wondering what would have happened if he didn't.
He would have let him continue, I'm sure. Mm. So I had to holler out. And then, you know, he still let him continue. And then that man continued to say, you know, words as he walked out of the chambers.
I'm sorry.
But Nirmal simply asked for an apology. Mayor Goodmanson just had to say, you know, that shouldn't have happened. And he didn't want to do that. It showed poor leadership skills on his part. He could have done a passive aggressive apology and said, I'm sorry you feel that way. And just been able to continue the meeting, but he chose not to. And he wanted to turn people against Nirmal, which didn't happen.
Yeah. And I have to do a newscast. Can I get you to hold on just for a sec? Because I don't want to cut this off. I don't want to be like
for
them.
For sure.
Okay. It's 11:30. I need to do a quick news update. Lisa Foxhall has called in. She was the other target. It was Nirmal and Lisa who got targeted by a man at the March 4th meeting of Langford Council. And it was quite coarse, quite brash. Called them boneheads. Apparently there are some other things that were said that weren't picked up by the microphone. And Nirmal Joel went to council this week and he asked for an apology for the way that the mayor failed to intervene sooner as the man was accosting, verbally of course, both himself and Lisa. More of her story right after this.
This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, back on the air here at CFAX 1070 doing an open line reaction. We played her clips on the show yesterday. Lisa Foxhall, calling in from Langford, was one of the participants in the meeting earlier this week where Nirmal Joel was trying to get an apology for the mayor failing to enforce the rules of decorum sooner at a prior meeting. Lisa, how did the idea come about to walk out of the room and call in from the hallway to get around Goodmanson's blockade?
Well, when Mayor Goodmanson, you know, started wanting us to channel the Jeopardy show, and
he said that,
you know,
too.
He did, and things are just getting ridiculous, and it showed that, you know, he wasn't taking Nirmal seriously.
Here, it sounded like this for anybody who missed it.
I wish we had Jeopardy music in the background.
Yeah, and he said Nirmal could just stand there with no microphone for the whole time, and he said, I wish we had Jeopardy music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just so immature of him and irresponsible. And so I just thought when he said he wasn't going to allow public participation and he tried to turn the gallery against Nirmal.
Yeah.
I believe that was after the recess when he came back.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, well, if you're going to allow online speakers, I'm going to walk out into the hall. And I'll Zoom. And I'll
you
speak
Zoom
online.
On your phone?
Yes. And so then I watched. I could see on my Zoom that one of the staff went to Mayor Goodmanson during the meeting when my name came up on the screen and started whispering to him during the meeting.
You were on the screen at that point? I remember seeing that. I was wondering what she was doing.
Yes, and in my opinion, they were trying to strategize, what should we do? We just saw her walk out of the room, and a second later, she just showed up on our screen now.
That is hilarious.
And she's figured she's outsmarted us.
Okay, that makes sense. Now that makes sense, because it was Marie Watmo I saw walk around the table, because Goodmanson, he reaches down at the phone, and you can see him like he wants to press it, but he looks up at the screen, and he keeps going, you can tell that something's wrong, but he doesn't want to say what it is. Your name being the only one on the screen would absolutely qualify.
Yeah, they didn't know what to do, and I guess they didn't plan for that in their recess.
No.
But it was just quick thinking, and so that's what I did. And then Scott Perry, Steve Rossander, they all followed after and did the same thing because they were all in the chambers as well.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so we were able to outsmart them on that. And, you know, unfortunately, when we speak, though, they've showed us with their press conference yesterday that they've already adopted this financial plan.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because May 6th, this final adoption, it's going to be on the agenda. Public participation is legal again. Like, people can show up and speak for final adoption, but they already held a press conference. What's going on?
Yeah, so it's a farce. When we're talking about the financial plan you know, it's we're falling on deaf ears because they're not listening and they're doing what they want to do. And they're not listening to the taxpayers. They have their own agenda. And again, they didn't even, you know, consult with the public on these sidewalks and the locations of them. So it's very disappointing and discouraging for our taxpayers, because maybe this isn't where the taxpayers would have wanted the sidewalks, or perhaps maybe this isn't what the taxpayers would have wanted. You know, we're in financial, hard times right now. Maybe they would have delayed this. It would have been nice to see what the public would have wanted with their hardworking money.
Yeah. Did you hear? Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was going to actually say if you had heard that Victoria's tree canopy is actually a lot worse than Langford's. This is Victoria Councillor Chris Coleman speaking to his colleagues December 14th of last year.
Remember that our arboreal canopy is about 28%, and our goal is to get to 40%, which means we need another 50,000 trees, mature trees, in the city, both on private lands and on public lands. And one of the ways not to increase the budget is to
see this. So they have to, Victoria has to plant 50,000 new trees to get to 40% urban canopy coverage. Council heard this week that Langford is already at 48,000. So even if Victoria planted 50,000 new trees, Langford would still have more trees in the municipality in terms of proportion for coverage. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that with Victoria, but, you know, it's not surprising because Langford now, they campaigned on disinformation and lies. And so none of that is surprising with the trees. And so, yeah, I'm just glad that they were proven wrong on that point. And hopefully, you know, they will understand that and move on. And we've always, you know, replanted trees. We've always had 40% trees.
For open spaces in places like West Hills. Yeah, that's part of the rule in terms of West Hills. Has to be 40% open spaces or green spaces. In many cases, and the data backs this up again, that's treed canopy. In fact, West Hills is the most treed neighborhood, according to canopy coverage, in Langford. Bear Mountain, as you would know, is just behind it in second place. But I'm thinking these are the newer developments are the ones that have more trees near them. I thought it was supposed to be backwards, but it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to say, too, I spoke about the tree bylaw in my speech. On September 20th, 2022, Councillor Guiry sat at the chambers reassuring residents that solutions existed to address the tree bylaw costs.
Yep, I remember that. Lanny Seaton chaired that meeting.
Yeah. And I asked her that night, on Monday night, I said, Councillor Guiry, please tell us what, you know, these solutions are before you continue this financial burden onto the taxpayers and pass this tree bylaw yet again. She has done none of that.
Yeah, I heard Mary Wagner try talking about how there are situations where the fine won't apply if the tree needs to come down. But to be clear, the cost that you're talking about and that others were talking about is that if you want to hire a qualified arborist to do the assessment, which you have to do in any event, that costs hundreds of dollars. So if people don't have the hundreds of dollars to get the arborist onto their property to find out whether or not the tree legally can be taken down, that's what's keeping people out. And Langford doesn't have any solution for that. None. I've checked.
Yeah, none. And that's why she has nothing to say. So it would be good to have her say something on that about these solutions that she told us that she has, but we're still waiting to hear them. And we have many, you know, seniors, especially, that this is costing them a lot of money with dangerous trees.
Yeah.
So I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah.
Also wanted to discuss, I went to the PFC meeting.
Oh, yeah?
And before I got there, I was surprised they didn't try to say anything to this because this council has banned signs.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You had to do public participation without seeing the agenda. How did you do that?
So basically, that's like going to a restaurant and being given a menu that is a blank piece of paper, and the server comes over and says, what would you like to order to eat?
And if you say the wrong thing, they scold you.
Yes, and you don't know what you can order because you don't know what the restaurant has or what is there.
So what did you do?
I just winged it, and of course, acting mayor was Councillor Yakucha. Keith Yakucha, who cut me off several times, and I had no idea what I was speaking to. They did not even give us the courtesy to tell us what the report was when they knew. They had it right there. It was given to them.
Yeah.
They could not tell the few of us that were able to make this last-minute meeting what, you know, we were going to be discussing the agenda.
Because I was thinking, how would they know when to interrupt you if nobody knew what was on the agenda? But they did. It was just you didn't.
Exactly. Exactly. Lack of transparency on their part. So I got there. I grabbed every PFC paraphernalia I could find.
Yeah.
And I spread PFC scarves all
you
over.
You did that?
Yes, all over the chambers.
Yeah.
Because I can't bring signs in, so I put PFC scarves on the chairs.
Okay, that was you. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, because I wanted to send some good vibes out from the PFC. And I was hoping for this 5-year deal. I knew the chances weren't very good, but I thought, you know what? Let's just send these vibes out to this council and hope we're going to get, you know, a good deal here. But we've seen that this council has poor negotiation skills, but let's try our best. And so I spoke, and Mike Wignall spoke, and Sandy spoke, and, you know, Sandy and I both got interrupted. And, of course, Sandy can't speak anything about the podcast that Kobe Harder has spoke.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, you know, we tried our best, and Langford Council, you know, they wanted us to believe the narrative that they wanted this 5-year deal, but there's two sides to every story.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard the side from the PFC.
No, they're being polite, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very disappointing that we don't have this 5-year deal. Elite sports are very important to our community. They help build a community. People become very emotionally attached to them, and it's a positive impact for our community and the economics to Langford and our businesses.
Hmm.
So I just wanted to touch on that and also to say that we're coming up to the 1-year anniversary of the evacuation of Ridgeview.
Yeah, April 24th is the day. It's April 23rd. There was the engineers. Actually, today is the 1-year anniversary of them getting the letter from engineers and geoscientists of BC. April 23rd is the anniversary of the engineering inspection, and the 24th is the anniversary of the evacuation.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say that, you know, I hope I check in with some of those tenants, and I hope that the council has done some work in the background about that and emergency planning for situations like that and learned from the ways that their mistakes and how they handled that and how they could have improved and where they went wrong. And I hope that they check in on those tenants and make sure that they're okay.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I haven't talked with Ashley McDonald in a long time. But, I can't believe it's been a year. God, it feels like it's been a million years, as well as yesterday all at once.
Well, with Langford Council, you know, every day or week, it's something different. So,
yeah,
I'm sure that's why it feels like a million years.
It is. Yeah. Anyway, Lisa Foxall, thanks for the update. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and hi to Ron from Maryland.
Oh, I'm sure he'll love that. Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Adam. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
All right. Here we go. Lisa Foxall calling in with the latest from Langford. She did public participation with the PFC meeting, and they wouldn't tell her what was on the agenda, but they would interrupt her when she ventured off the agenda. So you could use that as like a backwards way to try to figure out what was on the agenda. Like, it's like a psychological experiment. It's so dumb. And then on earlier this week, like it got even worse. Nirmal wanted an apology for what happened to him and Lisa. And would Goodmanson give it, or was Goodmanson willing to literally derail the entire meeting so he could cross his arms and sulk? Well, I mean, that's pretty much what happened. Oh. Oh, I've actually got an email here from Steve Rossander talking about the YMCA membership units that he talked about yesterday. We want to revise that because we've had a chance to look at the numbers. I'm going to talk about that coming up.
If it's happening, it's here. This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
What the hell is a membership unit and how does that relate to a membership? That was something that Steve Rossander and I were trying to figure out on yesterday's program. He called in because he's got access to documents. We're trying to figure out. The thrust of the data that he had was that memberships were improving at the West Hills YMCA, and he had a metric that he called membership units that he shared with us in terms of it growing over time. Now, I said, well, that's not a membership, though. That's something different. So we were still trying to figure out exactly what that relationship was. He said he'd get back to us. He's actually called in again today because Steve Rossander, I understand that we've taken a second look at those numbers that you and I talked about yesterday. And today you can tell us, instead of just membership units, and I know there's a monthly thing in there and all this other stuff, how many actual memberships are happening at the Y? Do we have that information at this point?
Yeah, and it's a real bit of a mind twist in it because, and I apologize. See, this is how you do it. I apologize because I actually added the numbers together, and it was should have been a monthly average. So I've updated the on the Langford site.
Okay,
I had some interesting requests from some Langford voters, I think, folks, and I said, well, hey, you got to remember, you guys kicked me out of that site because I was asking questions prior to the election. So I didn't feel comfortable really posting or having anybody post something up there because, quite honestly, I can't comment on that site, and I can't defend myself. And there was all sorts of I could see it, and there's all sorts of people questioning my integrity on that site still. And
are there?
I have nothing, but I want to be transparent, so I'm phoning in to say, yeah, I made a mistake by adding the numbers when I should have averaged them. So I have posted that revised information on the Our Langford site.
Okay.
But regardless, I think membership units seems to be a bit of a red herring in this whole conversation. That appears to be just like how many people went and used the facility and on a particular month, right?
Okay.
I think what's more important is the actual revenue numbers that they're receiving from memberships because it's about the money, right?
Yeah, you told us about that yesterday. So yesterday you told us that there had been 160% give or take increase in revenues between 2021 and 2023. Was that correct?
That is correct.
Still
revenue
correct? Okay.
Went from $999,600 in 2021 to $2.6 million in 2023, right?
Okay.
The other thing we do know is we know that Derek Gent, the CEO at the Y, West Shore Y, told Langford Council at the February 27th, 2023 Committee of the Whole that their memberships were approximately 6,500, which was down from the roughly 13,500 members prior to the pandemic.
Okay, but that's a different unit. That's not a membership unit. That's a membership.
He used the words membership.
Okay, so that's something different maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think memberships are actual memberships. If you fast forward to March 18th, when the Goldstream Gazette did an interview with one of the YMCA people, they reported that there was more than 9,000 members now at the YMCA, with more than 600 additional people signing up just last December alone. So that means from the time that Mr. Gent came in February 2023 to the end of 2023, the members actually increased by about 2,500.
Potentially.
That's a 38% increase.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, because
so
yesterday
lots of numbers flying around here.
Well, I know,
I'm phoning in to correct the record.
All right.
And I'm trying to show the council this is when if you do make a mistake, this is how you can come forth and say, yeah, this is what's happening here, and you can make a correction.
Okay. And I appreciate the integrity, Stephen. Yesterday I was just because I hadn't had a chance to calculate the numbers myself yesterday, and I was getting texts with people saying they sounded like they were a little high. And I shared that information with you yesterday, which is why I appreciated you yesterday saying, well, okay, we're going to double check this, obviously, and we'll make sure the CFAX audience has the correct information that it needs. But the thrust of what you were calling in to share yesterday was correct, and that is we are doing better in terms of the number of memberships and the revenues at this facility in 2023 than they were in 2021. The conversation should be about the present financial status, not how things were during the worst parts of COVID.
Correct, and what their trajectory is. And the data would seem to indicate that they are well on their way to a full recovery.
Okay.
And in fact, right? And so it really does bring in the question into question, what, if any, additional subsidy needs to be given, and why, or should we even bother consider purchasing this if they are on track to full recovery here?
Okay. Well, I'm still interested, because it was the number that caught my ear yesterday that I think was the substance of the conversation, was that revenues were up from memberships by 162% in like 3 years, which is huge. Are they going to stay at that level? Will they continue climbing? I don't know. I'm not sure anybody knows. But that's the information the public deserves to know before, on behalf of the public, the city of Langford decides to drop $30 million and buy this place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, Adam, I appreciate the you taking my call so that I could call in and, like I said, correct the record for myself.
You said you double-check for us, so I appreciate you doing that. Thank you, Steve.
All right, Adam. You have a great day.
All right. You too. You take care. Bye now. There's Steve Ross Center calling in with regrets in terms of adding monthly totals instead of taking the average to both sides, 2021 and 2023. The revenues, though. I can see the balance sheet here, and the revenues are substantially higher. 2018, though, in 2019, I'm seeing the revenue here from actual memberships, and we're still not quite there. It looks like they were just over $4 million on the membership column that I'm seeing here in 2019. That's before COVID. It crashes down to $1.1 million in 2020, and it's $999,000 in 2021. That's where it bottoms out. But it's up, as you heard Steve say, to 2.6 million. Again, now that's less than the 4 million that it enjoyed before COVID. So it still hasn't completely rebounded, but it's also moving upward. It's moving upward steeply. So that should be part of the conversation in terms of happening. And as for the total number of memberships there, unless I still don't fully understand how the metrics work myself. So we call that potentially in terms of the actual number of active memberships that it might have right now. The whole point, though, is that it is getting better. So what we determine the economic viability to be in 2022, well, was not representative of 2023. 2022, they made 1.6 million off memberships. They made 2.6 in 2023. What will 2024 be? I don't know. But that trajectory is a hopeful one. It's one of improvement. And yesterday I shared a theory with you on the program where we supposed that changing economic viability might be the cause of the delay with the municipality of Langford actually locking in and choosing to buy this particular asset. Or maybe it's not. Again, we're just speculating. Everything we go back and check with Langford, nothing is ever what it seems. I've just learned everything I hear about Langford, everything I see, everything I learn, regardless of whether it's on the minutes or if it's a recorded video of a meeting, I check all the facts against other facts because there are discrepancies all over the place. And it's through this sort of this fog, if you will, that you and I try to get closer to the truth every day. So I appreciate Steve Ross and I appreciate his diligence. I appreciate he's actually shared the documents with me as well. And I appreciate him coming back onto the program to clarify. That speaks a lot. We'll take a quick break. We're back after this.